On Friday, President Obama will sign a farm bill that took Congress almost 3 years to work out. News stories say it will cost almost $1 trillion. But what will it do to America's dairyland? To assess the farm bill's impact on Wisconsin, I want to thank Mark Stevenson, UW-Madison Director of Dairy Policy Analysis, and Paul Mitchell, UW-Madison Professor of Ag and Applied Economics. Gentlemen, welcome to Wisconsin Eye.
Thank you, Steve.
Well, before we get into the nitty-gritty nuts and bolts, why does it take Congress 2 to 3 years? Was it the fight over the food stamp cut, do you think?
That was certainly one of the big ones. But, you know, you need to recognize that this is a very large bill. It's 1,000 pages in its final draft form, and it contains a lot of titles. It's what we would call an omnibus package, that they packed a lot of different bills into this and passed it as one. So it's large and complex, and there are a lot of competing interests for what's contained in the bills.
Sounds like it. 1,000 pages, Paul?
Oh, yeah. I think, well, technically, I think it's 959 or something,
wow.
But close enough.
Sounds like the Affordable Care Act. Okay. In
well,
its complexity.
I don't think there's anything particularly special about it in terms of what Congress has been having a hard time getting much done in the last few years anyway. I don't think the farm bill is any different than some of the other disagreements we've had.
Okay.
No, and it's provided points of contention, obviously. We call it a farm bill, but of course it's also a nutrition bill, a food and nutrition bill.
Mm-hmm.
And the food and nutrition part is actually the majority of the expenditures that would be expected under there. It's about 80% of the total expenditures that you talked about. Agriculture accounts for about 20%, so a much smaller portion.
Yeah. I understand. Well, let me ask you an overview question before we get into some of the nuts and bolts. Will, is Wisconsin a net winner or net loser just under the bill? Can you talk in generalities, Mr. Stevenson?
Well,
you
want
to go first?
Well, I'll talk mostly about dairy, I guess, because that's my area of expertise. I think that we're going to find that the dairy industry likes the farm bill that was finally passed. It was one of the most contentious pieces of the entire farm bill, and right down to the very bitter end was what was holding up the conference report from coming to the floor of the House and Senate for votes. But it finally made it out. And what was passed out of there is going to be something that I think Wisconsin dairy producers will enjoy because of its relative simplicity. And it does cover a larger proportion of milk for some of our larger dairy farms that didn't like the previous bill that we had, the MILC program.
Okay, then we'll come back to some of those details. Paul, you're expert in corn, soybeans, and grains?
And crops in general, and crop insurance. And I think on the crop side, not thinking about it from the dairy producer side, is Wisconsin should be a net winner as well. The overall reduction in spending on commodity support isn't substantial. Maybe between crop insurance and commodity support total is about a 6% cut. And what it's really been is a shift away from traditional commodity support programs, price and revenue support, towards a crop insurance. Actual expenditures on crop insurance, they anticipate to go up about 6%, whereas expenditures on traditional commodity support for corn and soybeans and the other major commodities is going to fall about 25%. And so, but on net, it's about a 6% loss for total spending at the aggregate level. But with that shift away from traditional towards crop insurance for mm-hmm. supporting agriculture, compared to our neighbors like Iowa, Minnesota, and states like that, we're a relatively low participation state in crop insurance, so we've got room to grow. If you're a Minnesota farmer, they're well over 90% of the acres are already insured of corn and soybeans. We're looking at 70-75%, and so we have a chunk of our farmers, 20-25% of the acres, that could start using crop insurance, and before they weren't getting those benefits.
Now, you use the term support. Is that just another way to say subsidies?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
The little research that I could do, and I told you I know just enough to be dangerous. Does the new farm bill throw out the old subsidy program? I mean, we have all read the huge amounts of money paid in subsidies to farmer XYZ. Does the new farm bill treat things differently, or do we still have subsidies?
We have subsidized programs. We've gotten away from most of our direct payments to farmers, which means that you didn't have to do anything in particular to simply receive a check, you know, that would have been for some practice that you may have done over the years. And now we've gotten to where most of these have moved toward insurance-type programs that only if you have need, if you have crop failure, if you have low prices if you have something that's actually happened to cause you financial harm? Would you be eligible for payment? And in most circumstances, farmers and producers are also having to contribute by purchasing the insurance, which means some premiums. Those premiums are probably not actuarially fair. They're subsidized by taxpayer dollars.
Okay. But on balance, Paul, is this, in terms of public policy, is this change wise?
It fits the political climate, which is often, to me, that's what the Farm Bill does. It reflects what the political climate is. And right now, we've gotten a little more budget conscious, so we're cutting spending. Nutrition program took a small hit compared
to
farm.
Took a 1% hit.
1%
yep.
hit, whereas the commodity support, meaning subsidization as well as the crop insurance side, took about a 6% cut. Conservation programs, CRP being the biggest one, again, about a 6% cut. So it does reflect that. And the move away from direct payments towards more payments when you're in need and a sharing of the cost through insurance. I pay part, you pay part, I being the farmer and you the government. We share that cost. It's a public-private partnership or it's sharing the burden. So I think it reflects the political climate in that way. Those play well among parties in general.
Let's talk about 2013. Did the Wisconsin ag industry have a pretty good year? The summary that I'm reading, it's very short. Wisconsin net farm income was up about 14% in 2013. The state's farmers netted about $3.75 billion. 2013, pretty good year to be a Wisconsin farmer, gentlemen?
Certainly was.
Yes.
From the grain standpoint, but also from the dairy producer standpoint, 2013 was a good year. We had relatively high milk prices as well.
Well, the summary, as we focus on dairy, excuse me, Mark, Wisconsin milk production that began in the middle of the last decade, sliding, peaked 1988, and since 2004, production has increased to nearly 28 billion pounds. Mm-hmm. So it was a good year last year to be a Wisconsin dairy farmer?
Yes.
With prices at what, sir?
Well, we had prices for dairy producers that were at the second highest level ever last year. So it was a good year. And we're anticipating that this next year, the year that we're in, 2014, is likely to be equally good, probably actually better from a producer revenue standpoint because feed grain prices have fallen pretty dramatically, so costs for producing milk will be down. This will be a very good year for dairy farmers.
Will that be as a result of the Farm Bill?
No.
Will not be?
That will be just as a result of market forces and movements. The Farm Bill is anticipating what often happens following a really good year like this. I mean, a very profitable year is a signal to any business that says the market wants more of what you produce. Make more of it. And dairy producers will do that ultimately. And every individual dairy producer will do what they can to produce more milk. That collectively may put too much milk on the market and will have prices collapse. That's what these programs are for, to help protect producers when they do finally collapse.
I want to come back to something you said. So the Farm Bill reflects the idea that the Wisconsin dairy market was pretty favorable last year?
Yes.
And you said it may collapse, potential window in that, year out, two years, 3 years?
It will take, in my estimation, at least a couple of years before that happens. We can do some things fairly quickly to increase milk production, but in the longer run, you actually have to raise additional animals. In the national herd, that's just hard to do. I mean, it takes a little time to do it, so at least a couple of years.
When I interviewed Ag Secretary Ben Bransel a few weeks ago, he told me something remarkable. Wisconsin imports milk? Mark, we do?
In a manner of speaking, yes, we do.
Where do we get it? From our neighboring?
We get it
from neighboring
states.
Sorry to keep interrupting. I just find it fascinating.
We do. We have cheesemakers in the state that are very good at the products that they produce, and they have markets for those products, and they would like to have more milk. They have typically put some non-fat milk solids in their vats to help standardize the products that they're making, and those have often come from outside the state. So milk and dairy products are moving into this state from other states, and we're at a point where we'd like to have some more milk right here at home.
Oh, that's fascinating. Well, does the Farm Bill, does it favor small dairy farmers or the large ones? Or is that too simple
and the dairy
a question?
Proposal, well, it's a little simplistic. That's why I hesitated just a bit. But there's a very clear cut in here. There is a social aspect to the dairy portion of the bill. The first 4 million pounds of historic milk production on a farm will have a premium fee that's much lower than for milk above 4 million pounds.
Premium fee means?
Premium fee means, for example, if you were going to buy auto insurance, you'd pay a premium for it.
Okay, thank you.
If you're going to buy this insurance for milk feed ratio, or what we call a margin here, it would be a premium fee to protect you against a catastrophic fall in prices. And there is a subsidization of these fees for particularly the farms that produce less than 4 million pounds, about 180 cows. If you're well above that, you get the less expensive premiums for that first 4 million pounds, but above and beyond that, you're going to pay a much higher fee for your premiums.
Okay, so it doesn't favor either the small or the large. Correct?
The large farms can get coverage, and they like that fact, but it is going to be more expensive than it would be on average for just a smaller farm.
Are we seeing, I will get to grains and crops in a minute, but are we seeing any big change in the number of dairy farmers in Wisconsin over the last few years, Mr. Stevenson?
We continue to lose farms, and you know, we've been doing that since the 1930s when we peaked in dairy farm numbers. It's been a long time, a slow and gradual lessening of farm numbers. Now, some of that's been Paul's fault. We've had
Let's bring him into the conversation.
We've had good grain prices the last two or three years, and some of our dairy producers have just felt that, you know, I'm getting a little older. I'm tired of milking cows, but I don't want to quit yet. Mm. So I'll produce corn and grain. We'll sell that to our dairy farmers next door. So we've got fewer dairy farms than we used to, but we're producing more milk than we ever have.
We are. Okay. Yeah. Okay. So, any other PSs on the dairy side of the farm bill before we talk about Mr. Corn and talk to Mr. Corn and soybeans?
Well, I think we should talk to Mr. Corn and soybeans.
Well, they, you know me, just enough to be dangerous. Corn prices fell. Is this correct, Paul? Corn prices fell from $7 a bushel in January to $4.27 in November. Does that sound right?
From January, not the past January, but 2013.
Yeah. Right. Does that sound right?
I haven't checked the numbers exactly, okay, but it's been really coming down.
We're pretty steep fall.
Yes.
But much less in soybeans. Central Illinois soybean prices were $14.18 per bushel in January, $13.36 in November.
Yeah, soybeans have been staying a little stronger. Agriculture has a tremendous capacity oversupply, and these high prices we've had the last few years have been hard on dairy. I mean, most of our corn and soy is used for animal feed, and so.
Why is it your fault what he just said? is this the idea? Go ahead.
No, I mean, my point is that when sometimes when crop prices get high, it becomes a problem for all the livestock producers because the crops are their inputs, and for farmers that are grazing grain, it's their output, so they get paid by grain. And then they sell it to their neighbors who might be dairy farmers only. A lot of dairy farmers are integrated and do a lot of their own crop production. Mm-hmm. But then they face the trade-off. Do I sell the corn or do I feed it to my cattle? If the milk price is really low, why not just sell the corn? We've had a tremendous decrease in prices over the last couple of years. And a lot of that was driven just by the bad weather we had in the two...
The drought in 2012?
And even 2013 was a little harder on soybeans than corn was. But there's been some areas hit by some pretty bad droughts. And so, South America's having a drought right now. And a part of me is wondering if that's not going to help us out some on our corn and bean prices.
Demand?
Yeah, because there'll be less supply down there.
So we had record dairy production last year. We set another record, right?
Yes.
What about corn production?
I haven't looked carefully, but I don't think it was right around average, if I remember correctly.
And then soybeans?
They were hurt a little bit lower than average, but they weren't way out of 2013 was a much bigger perturbation from average. I think 10% below average for beans, and like this is at the national level, mm-hmm. and I think in the 20s for corn. So that's why we had shortage of supply. The price shoots up to get people to ration it.
So, and if I'm a corn or soybean farmer watching this show, and I haven't really dug into the farm bill yet, what advice or what do I need to know, Mr. Mitchell?
You're going to have to make some choices about your support programs. Most people are going to re-enroll, and the dates I haven't looked carefully what the dates are and when all the deadlines are. But the direct payments and countercyclical payments are gone. That was the traditional primary way of providing subsidization to corn and soybean.
Is that a big hit for our corn and soybean farmers?
No, because they're going to be replaced by different programs. And
okay.
So it's the countercyclical payments are gone. It's being replaced by something called price loss coverage or, a new program called ARC, Agriculture Risk Coverage.
That's all right. It's okay.
And so the farmers are going to have to make a choice. In the Midwest here, we'll probably, most of our growers will switch to ARC. But most farmers will switch to ARC because it's a revenue support program. The Southerners tend to like the price support programs. And PLC, the new one, is essentially the old countercyclical payment program, just higher target prices.
Well, let's talk about dairy farmers and corn and soybean farmers. Where can they get information on the new farm bill? Well, they're going to watch the show, of course, but where else might they get information?
Well, we're in the process of putting together a lot of information sheets. These programs, as Paul indicated, many of them are new, and they have some new different twists. But I should also caution people, we've got the skeleton of a new program in place here, and we know what all these major big bones and pieces are of this thing. Mm-hmm. But USDA has to now take back Congress and the president what was signed into law and write all the details that actually allow them to implement this.
Oh, all the rules and regs.
Yes. And that's why the deadlines and dates are not clear yet, and just what those programs are going to be like. There's a lot of implementation work to be done
yet.
Okay,
yeah. That's the fine print, right, gentlemen?
I'm sorry. And the secretary has said that we'll try to have this in place by the 1st of September. They may get it done before that, but you know, they aren't going to change the major architecture of these pieces, but some of those small details can make a difference.
Okay, I understand.
Yeah, and like I haven't looked carefully, but crop insurance for corn and soybeans is March 15th is the purchase date. I don't think any of these rules will be ready to be in place by then. I might be wrong. We'll have to double check. But like I said, it hasn't even been signed into law, so I've been waiting to make sure that somebody doesn't throw a rule change in there.
But corn and soybeans farmers, they're going into winter, they're having to plan the next season, aren't they?
Yeah.
Are they going in there with enough information? Are they? I mean, it's always a bet when you're a farmer. But
right. No.
Is it more of a bet this year, given the uncertainties in the farm bill?
I don't think the old programs are in place. The crop insurance program hasn't been changed in the sense of what they're going to be purchasing for this by March 15th this year for their futures the coming summer, but the rules aren't going to be tremendously different. And I think we're going to have plenty of lead time. It's not going to be till next fall, is my guess. It's a lot of these deadlines because it can't take a 1,000-page bill and turn it into implementable programs in a few weeks.
Where do farmers get this information? I'm sorry, you were going to say, Mark?
Well, certainly the universities are going to be putting together plenty of information, and it will be broadly available through websites, through paper, through news programs, through all kinds of things. But I think that we'll also find that Farm Service Agency from USDA locally will be one of the primary points where people will need to sign up for some of these programs, and will also learn about the programs as a result of that. You'll find articles in all of the farm popular press, and there'll be lots of ways that you can access the information.
Okay. We talked about dairy farms. Any big change in the farm bill for our beef farmers? Anybody know?
Your livestock, but I haven't looked carefully.
Okay. I would think if there were, you gentlemen, I would know it.
Actually, the one thing they are talking about is when I said how we're spending, actual spending on crop insurance is going up, more emphasis is going to be on livestock insurance. And so I think maybe some of that's what some of that increase is. So maybe there's going to be an increase in some of the livestock policies. I know a swine catastrophic policy for diseases, and I haven't looked carefully at beef, but I...
Just that concept. Who bears the risk? Does the federal government, meaning we taxpayers, or does a pig farmer bear more risk, do you think, as a result of the farm bill?
Well, there's been it's a risk sharing, and I haven't sat down and penciled out what the relative amounts are, but in general, they aren't going to be huge shifts because some of them are borne by the insurance companies themselves. It's not just the government. It's just a managed program, and so insurance companies bear some of the risk, the government bears some of the risk, and the farmer bears some of the risk. And those relative shares, I don't think are going to shift dramatically.
Okay. Other crops that are important to Wisconsin, if there were profound changes, I think you'd know about them. Apple, cranberry, ginseng, anything?
Potato and the vegetables.
Potato and vegetables.
Yeah,
any big changes from the current rules?
The rules, no. I mean, we're the second largest processing vegetable industry in the nation. California, tomatoes, that's where all that comes. And then here it's green beans, sweet corn, beets and carrots.
Number two? Cabbage. We're number two?
Cabbage. Yeah, in terms of processing, not fresh. We're talking processed. We're a major fresh potato producer as well.
Yeah.
And what those have shifted, those... commodity organizations haven't really pushed for a subsidization program like we have for corn and soybeans and wheat, cotton and such. They're more interested in programs like for research and for like the Clean Plant Network and stuff like that, to have the government help do things like keep invasive weeds or invasive pathogens from coming in, or transmission of pathogens between moving a potted plant in Michigan to Wisconsin and bringing late blight in that impacts the tomato, or the in our state be the potato industry would be could, and all of a sudden we've got a major pathogen. That's the kind of things that they've been asking for. So the potato and vegetable growers, the cranberry people, those associations, those have pushed for these research special crop block grants. Those are all meant for promotion and research.
Our colleges and universities do a tremendous volume of ag-related research in all areas. Does this, do you think this farm bill continues or even grows the amount of money for research?
It certainly does over what we've seen in the last year or
two. That's good news.
Yes. The sequestration not only froze things, but contracted many of the dollars that were available for research programs and outreach programs and just quite a few other things. Not all from the farm bill, but actually the passage that we've had recently of the budget restored much of the funding and actually increased some of that a little bit. So I think that this vector that we have here for generating new information and being able to get that out to people through research and extension and outreach is going to be a little bit better off as a result of this.
We do hundreds of millions of research in both dairy and grain, don't we?
And the specialty crops, yes.
Specialty crops.
Yeah, there was a ranking that came out last summer. We're the fourth best agricultural college globally. And so, yeah, a big chunk of that is our research.
You rah, rah. Interesting feature. There's a new 15-cent per Christmas tree fee in this bill?
In the footnotes, practically. No, it is.
We're
a major Christmas tree growing state.
I think we're one of the top three or four, excuse me.
So
when everybody buys a real Christmas tree, non-plastic, there's a 50-cent, 15. That's important.
And probably also important to recognize that this is not going to be taxed to the consumer directly. This is an assessment on the growers of Christmas trees. They've agreed to self-assess 15 cents per tree that's sold. That will be used for promotion of their product. We have a number of boards like that.
Yes.
Dairy has also assesses themselves cotton. 15 cents for promotion, cotton, corn. Yeah.
Soybeans, I mean, there's some major research funding that comes from the soybean.
But those growers are going to pass it on to what my wife and I buy, the tree every December, aren't they?
We would assume so, but if you can see it on the cost of your tree, I'd be surprised.
So much for balsam, so much for whatever. Does a farm bill do anything to our cranberry crop growers?
Not that I recognize in the details. I didn't look carefully for it, other than just the emphasis on the research and the issues for horticultural crops.
Okay. This is a five-year farm bill, cost of almost $1 trillion. Does the knowing the rules allow all of our growers and farmers then, does that give them a more stable outlook for the next 5 years than they've had, given the almost 3 years of uncertainty? What's in the farm bill? All this discussion of we're going to see $7 a gallon of milk. You guys heard that. That probably drove you crazy because it wasn't going to happen, right?
No, it wasn't. The dairy cliff. It still lives. We'll be able to talk about it 5 years from now. We still have permanent legislation that could possibly be invoked, but the likelihood is essentially zero that it would. But yes, I mean, there are all of our businesses, farm businesses, the input suppliers to farms, the output manufacturers, the cheese plants, they like to know and understand what the policy parameters are, because it makes business more stable to be able to know that things aren't going to be changed radically over the next 5 years. That said, I think that policy can impact what happens at the edges. You know, we can speed up major trends, or maybe we can slow down major trends, but you're not going to change those major trends. One thing you talked about was the loss of dairy farms. All of us, you know, would like to think we could stop that, but it's not likely to happen because there are efficiencies, these scale economies in large farms. But we do have some programs that may slow that down by favoring some of the smaller farms with a lower premium cost. So to that extent, I think our businesses are going to be happy to know what the next 5 years holds for them in the way of policy.
That also true for corn, soybeans?
Yeah, I've been talking about the Farm Bill for a while because we thought we were going to have one, then we didn't, then we thought we'd have one, then we didn't.
Right. Fits and starts of Congress.
Yeah. And so when I started really looking at the details on the commodity side, both the House and Senate versions that passed earlier and the ones even before that were actually quite similar and weren't drastic changes. It's more of a shifting towards revenue support. And as I told farmers, look, you know, these aren't going to be major changes. And, I mean, frankly, the last few years with their high commodity prices, the income numbers you're showing, the farm programs are less than 5% of farm income. It's all about markets being driven by what's going on internationally, the weather. Yeah. That's more important. These are just helpful. And in some years, it gets really high in the 30-40% range of farm income is from these programs. That means we've had a bad year. Okay. And that's so the last few years have been very good. And so yeah, I think the uncertainty is nice to clear up, but yep. They've got bigger uncertainties with the climate and weather and such.
We've only got a few minutes, but I want to come back. I'm going to use the E word, Paul, ethanol. Does a farm bill do anything to... One of the biggest bets America made is in ethanol, and the subsidies are no longer in place, right?
Yes, from my understanding, the subsidies are gone. I don't follow the bio... There's a whole section on there on the bio-based economy or something like that was uh-huh. one of the titles, and we've got people in our department that focus on that and at the university. But my understanding is there hasn't been an ethanol subsidy for a while. There's still the renewable fuel standard, but not a subsidization of ethanol.
Okay.
But since we went after biofuels, you know, it's been a relatively short number of years. It was really quite astonishing to see that the use of corn, the single largest mm-hmm. use is ethanol production and not as animal feed anymore. Pretty close to the, you know, equal, but, you know, it's actually bigger. So this is a big change in a short period of yeah. time.
But you still see gasoline stations that say no ethanol. They believe you get better mileage without ethanol. Is that true?
My understanding is like the E85 vehicles and such, yes. I think, it, yeah. but then...
There's less calories in yeah. a gallon of ethanol than there is a gallon of gas, so okay. you can go further. It's a matter of you know, the cost, and there are some engine benefits, I think, to running ethanol in terms of environmentally friendly or cleaner.
Okay, burning. I just have two more questions. Is there any unique Wisconsin provision in the Farm Bill that you gentlemen have found? Unique. Anybody's any member of Congress leave a distinctive signature on any provision?
I didn't see one. I was curious about ginseng because that's, and I called and he said, well, that has been there since the 08 Farm Bill on the country of origin labeling.
Okay.
Ginseng is listed specifically under that, but.
We had a number of members of Congress that were very actively involved uh-huh. In trying to help craft and think about various provisions, and some of them had the names of congressmen on them, but they didn't make it through conference. So. Okay. The conference okay. bill actually stripped many of those pieces out.
Okay. My final question is, what surprised you both? Any one thing in the Farm Bill surprised you first, both? And I'm going to go first because is it true there's going to be labeling on meat now? How is that going to work?
Country of origin.
Oh, boy. USA yeah. Today reports pork, chicken, or beef sold in the United States must include details on where the animal was born, slaughtered, and processed. That's my nominee.
We've been trying very hard to make sure that we have better tracking of all food products for food safety issues.
Yes.
If we have an outbreak, for example, of illness that we see, we want to know, did that come from spinach that was consumed? And if so, where did that spinach come from, a particular grower? The same thing is true for animal agriculture. And so there has been this thought about the imposition of some of these pieces of labeling for meats and animal products that come from, say, Canada, for example. We think our Canadian compatriots do a very good job of producing meat and milk and animal feeds and things, but if they're coming in here, we'd like to be able to know where that food product actually came from back to the farm.
That was just my nominee for biggest surprise. Do you have one, Mark?
I was fascinated with the process this year. Farm bills are always unique. But I have never seen one that evolved like this one did, and it was a really stunning thing to watch.
Washington in action. Paul, any surprises?
For me, it's been in there since the summer, or before. It was conservation compliance for crop insurance, where before we had conservation compliance for farm program payments, they added on to crop insurance. And it was brought up a couple years ago, and and I heard a lot of people got excited, a lot of people got angry, and it's been staying in there, and it made it through. So if you have highly rotable land, there are rules. You can't, you won't be able to get your big insurance premium subsidies if you're not following conservation compliance.
Okay. And this bill is a five-year bill?
Yes.
So we don't do this dance again for 5 years or 6 years or 7 years?
Boy, let's hope not.
Yes, yes. On that note, Mark Stevenson, Paul Mitchell, thanks very much for coming in to peek into the Farm Bill Impact on Wisconsin.
You're welcome,
thank
Steve.
You.
You're welcome.
Thank
thanks.
You.